If there was ever going to be an opening for him, Jace thought this was probably it. He swung his arm back and punched Sebastian as hard as he could in the face. Bone crunched under his knuckles. The blow sent Sebastian sprawling. He skidded backward in the dirt, the sword flying from his grip. Jace caught it up as he darted forward, and a second later was standing over Sebastian, blade in hand. Sebastian's nose was bleeding, the blood a scarlet streak across his face. He reached up and pulled his collar aside, baring his pale throat. "So go ahead," he said. "Kill me already." Jace hesitated. He didn't want to hesitate, but there it was, an annoying reluctance to kill anyone lying helpless on the ground in front of him. Jace remembered Valentine taunting him back at Renwick's, daring his son to kill him, and Jace hadn't been able to do it. But Sebastian was a murderer. He'd killed Max and Hodge. He raised the sword, and Sebastian erupted off the ground, faster than the eye could follow. He seemed to fly into the air, performing an elegant backflip and landing gracefully on the grass, barely a foot away. As he did, he kicked out, striking Jace's hand. The kick sent the sword spinning out of Jace's grasp. Sebastian caught it out of the air, laughing, and slashed out with the blade, whipping it toward Jace's heart. Jace leaped backward and the blade split the air just in front of him, slicing his shirt open down the front. There was a stinging pain and Jace felt blood welling from a shallow slice across his chest. Sebastian chuckled, advancing toward Jace, who backed up, fumbling his insufficient dagger out of his belt as he went. He looked around, desperately hoping there was something else he could use as a weapon, a long stick, anything. There was nothing around him but the grass, the river running by, and the trees above spreading their thick branches overhead like a green net. Suddenly he remembered the Malachi configuration the Inquisitor had trapped him in. Sebastian wasn't the only one who could jump. Sebastian slashed the sword toward him again, but Jace had already leaped, straight up into the air. The lowest tree branch was about 20 feet high. He caught at it, swinging himself up and over. Kneeling on the branch, he saw Sebastian on the ground spin around and look up. Jace flung the dagger and heard Sebastian shout. Breathless, he straightened up. And Sebastian was suddenly on the branch beside him. His pale face was flushed angrily, his sword arm streaming blood. He had dropped the sword evidently in the grass, though that merely made them even, Jace thought, since his dagger was gone as well. He saw with some satisfaction that for the first time Sebastian looked angry. Angry and surprised, as if a pet he'd thought was tame had bitten him. "That was fun," Sebastian said, "but now it's over." He flung himself at Jace, catching him around the waist, knocking him off the branch. They fell 20 feet through the air, clutched together, tearing at each other, and hit the ground hard. Hard enough that Jace saw stars behind his eyes. He grabbed for Sebastian's injured arm and dug his fingers in. Sebastian yelled and backhanded Jace across the face. Jace's mouth filled with salty blood. He gagged on it as they rolled through the dirt together, slamming punches into each other. He felt a sudden shock of icy cold. They'd rolled down the slight incline into the river and were lying half in, half out of the water. Sebastian gasped, and Jace took the opportunity to grab for the other boy's throat and close his hands around it, squeezing. Sebastian choked, seizing Jace's right wrist in his hand and jerking it backward, hard enough to snap the bones. Jace heard himself scream as if from a distance, and Sebastian pressed the advantage, twisting the broken wrist mercilessly until Jace let go of him and fell back in the cold, watery mud, his arm a howl of agony. Half kneeling on Jace's chest, one knee digging hard into his ribs, Sebastian grinned down at him. His eyes shone out white and black from a mask of dirt and blood. Something glittered in his right hand, Jace's dagger. He must have picked it up from the ground. Its point rested directly over Jace's heart. "And we find ourselves exactly where we were 5 minutes ago," Sebastian said. "You've had your chance, Wayland. Any last words?" Jace stared up at him, his mouth streaming blood, his eyes stinging with sweat, and felt only a sense of total and empty exhaustion. Was this really how he was going to die?
Wayland, he said. You know that's not my name. You have as much claim to it as you have to the name of Morgenstern, said Sebastian. He bent forward, leaning his weight onto the dagger. Its tip pierced Jace's skin, sending a hot stab of pain through his body. Sebastian's face was inches away, his voice a hissing whisper. Did you really think you were Valentine's son? Did you really think a whining, pathetic thing like yourself was worthy of being a Morgenstern? Of being my brother? He tossed his white hair back. It was lank with sweat and creek water. You're a changeling, he said. My father butchered a corpse to get you and make you one of his experiments. He tried to raise you as his own son, but you were too weak to be any good to him. You couldn't be a warrior. You were nothing, useless. So he palmed you off on the Lightwoods and hoped you might be of some use to him later, as a decoy, or as bait. He never loved you. Jace blinked his burning eyes.
Then you?
I am Valentine's son, Jonathan Christopher Morgenstern. You never had any right to that name. You're a ghost, a pretender.
His eyes were black and glinting, like the carapaces of dead insects. And suddenly Jace heard his mother's voice, as if in a dream, but she wasn't his mother, saying, Jonathan's not a baby anymore. He isn't even human. He's a monster.
You're the one, Jace choked. The one with the demon blood. Not me. That's right. The dagger slid another millimeter into Jace's flesh. Sebastian was still grinning, but it was a rictus grin like a skull's. You're the angel boy. I had to hear all about you. You with your pretty angel face and your pretty manners and your delicate, delicate feelings. You couldn't even watch a bird die without crying. No wonder Valentine was ashamed of you.
No.
Jace forgot the blood in his mouth, forgot the pain.
You're the one he's ashamed of. You think he wouldn't take you with him to the lake because he needed to stay here and open the gate at midnight? Like he didn't know you wouldn't be able to wait. He didn't take you with him because he's ashamed to stand up in front of the angel and show him what he's done. Show him the thing he made. Show him you.
Jace gazed up at Sebastian. He could feel a terrible, triumphant pity blazing in his own eyes. He knows there's nothing human in you. Maybe he loves you, but he hates you, too.
Shut up!
Sebastian pushed down on the dagger, twisting the hilt. Jace arced backward with a scream, and agony burst like lightning behind his eyes. I'm going to die, he thought. I'm dying. This is it. He wondered if his heart had already been pierced. He couldn't move, couldn't breathe. He knew now what it must be like for a butterfly pinned to a board. He tried to speak, tried to say a name, but nothing came out of his mouth but more blood. And yet Sebastian seemed to read his eyes.
Clary. I'd almost forgotten. You're in love with her, aren't you? The shame of your nasty, incestuous impulses must nearly have killed you. Too bad you didn't know she's not really your sister. You could have spent the rest of your life with her, if only you weren't so stupid.
He bent down, pushing the knife in harder, its edge scraping bone. He spoke in Jace's ear, a voice as soft as a whisper.
She loved you too. He said. Keep that in mind while you die.
Darkness flooded in from the edges of Jace's vision, like dye spilling onto a photograph, blotting out the image. Suddenly, there was no pain at all. He felt nothing, not even Sebastian's weight on him, as if he were floating. Sebastian's face drifted over him, white against the darkness. The dagger raised in his hand. Something bright gold glittered at Sebastian's wrist, as if he were wearing a bracelet. But it wasn't a bracelet because it was moving. Sebastian looked toward his hand, surprised as the dagger fell from his loosened grasp and struck the mud with an audible sound. Then the hand itself separated from his wrist, thumped to the ground beside it. Jace stared wonderingly as Sebastian's severed hand bounced and came to rest against a pair of high black boots. The boots were attached to a pair of delicate legs, rising to a slender torso and a familiar face capped with a waterfall of black hair. Jace raised his eyes and saw Isabel. Her whip soaked with blood, her eyes fastened on Sebastian, who was staring at the bloody stump of his wrist with open-mouthed amazement. Isabel smiled grimly. "That was for Max, you bastard."
"Bitch," Sebastian hissed, and sprang to his feet as Isabel's whip came slashing at him again with incredible speed. He ducked sideways and was gone. There was a rustle. He must have vanished into the trees, Jace thought, though it hurt too much to turn his head and look.
"Jace!" Isabel knelt down over him, her stele shining in her left hand. Her eyes were bright with tears. He must seem pretty bad, Jace realized, for Isabel to look like that.
"Isabel," he tried to say.
He wanted to tell her to go, to run, that no matter how spectacular and brave and talented she was, and she was all those things, she was no match for Sebastian.
And there was no way that Sebastian was going to let a little thing like getting his hand sliced off stop him.
But all that came out of Jace's mouth was a sort of gurgling noise. "Don't talk." He felt the tip of her stele burn against the skin of his chest. "You'll be fine." Isabel smiled down at him tremulously. "You're probably wondering what the hell I'm doing here," she said. "I don't know how much you know. I don't know what Sebastian's told you, but you're not Valentine's son."
The arate was close to finished. Already Jace could feel the pain fading. He nodded slightly, trying to tell her, "I know."
"Anyway, I wasn't going to come looking for you after you ran off, because you said in your note not to, and I got that. But there was no way I was going to let you die thinking you have demon blood, or without telling you that there's nothing wrong with you, though honestly, how you could have thought anything so stupid in the first place."
Isabel's hand jerked, and she froze, not wanting to spoil the rune.
"And you needed to know that Clary's not your sister," she said more gently, because you just did. "So I got Magnus to help me track you. I used that little wooden soldier you gave to Max. I don't think Magnus would have done it normally, but let's just say he was in an unusually good mood, and I may have told him Alec wanted him to do it, although that wasn't strictly true. But it'll be a while before he finds that out, and once I knew where you were, well, he'd already set up that portal, and I'm very good at sneaking."
Isabel screamed. Jace tried to reach for her, but she was beyond his grasp. Being lifted, flung to the side, her whip fell from her hand. She scrambled to her knees, but Sebastian was already in front of her. His eyes blazed with rage, and there was a bloody cloth tied around the stump of his wrist. Isabel darted for her whip, but Sebastian moved faster. He spun and kicked out at her hard. His booted foot connected with her ribcage. Jace almost thought he could hear Isabel's ribs crack as she flew backward, landing awkwardly on her side. He heard her cry out. Isabel, who never cried out in pain. As Sebastian kicked her again and then caught up her whip, brandishing it in his hand. Jace rolled onto his side. The almost finished iratze had helped, but the pain in his chest was still bad, and he knew, in a detached sort of way, that the fact that he was coughing up blood probably meant that he had a punctured lung. He wasn't sure how long that gave him. Minutes, probably. He scrabbled for the dagger where Sebastian had dropped it next to the grisly remains of his hand. Jay staggered to his feet. The smell of blood was everywhere. He thought of Magnus's vision, the world turned to blood, and his slippery hand tightened on the hilt of the dagger. He took a step forward, then another. Every step felt like he was dragging his feet through cement. Isabel was screaming curses at Sebastian, who was laughing as he brought the whip down across her body. Her screams drew Jace forward like a fish caught on a hook, but they grew fainter as he moved. The world was spinning around him like a carnival ride. "One more step," Jace told himself. "One more." Sebastian had his back to him. He was concentrating on Isabel. He probably thought Jace was already dead, and he nearly was. "One step," he told himself, but he couldn't do it, couldn't move, couldn't bring himself to drag his feet one more step forward. Blackness was rushing in at the edges of his vision. a more profound blackness than the darkness of sleep. A blackness that would erase everything he had ever seen and bring him a rest that would be absolute, peaceful. He thought, suddenly, of Clary. Clary as he had last seen her asleep, with her hair spread across the pillow and her cheek on her hand. He had thought then that he had never seen anything so peaceful in his life. But of course she had only been sleeping, like anyone else might sleep. It hadn't been her peace that had surprised him, but his own. The peace he felt at being with her was like nothing he had ever known before. Pain jarred up his spine, and he realized with surprise that somehow, without any volition of his own, his legs had moved forward that last crucial step. Sebastian had his arm back, the whip shining in his hand. Isabel lay on the grass, a crumpled heap, no longer screaming, no longer moving at all. "You little lightwood bitch," Sebastian was saying. "I should have smashed your face in with that hammer when I had the chance." And Jace brought his hand up with the dagger in it and sank the blade into Sebastian's back. Sebastian staggered forward, the whip falling out of his hand. He turned slowly and looked at Jace, and Jace thought, with a distant horror, that maybe Sebastian really wasn't human, that he was unkillable after all. Sebastian's face was blank, the hostility gone from it, and the dark fire from his eyes. He no longer looked like Valentine, though. He looked scared. He opened his mouth, as if he meant to say something to Jace, but his knees were already buckling. He crashed to the ground, the force of his fall sending him sliding down the incline and into the river. He came to rest on his back, his eyes staring sightlessly up at the sky. The water flowed around him, carrying dark threads of his blood downstream on the current. "He taught me there's a place on a man's back where if you sink a blade in, you can pierce his heart and sever his spine all at once," Sebastian had said. "I guess we got the same birthday present that year, big brother," Jace thought. "Didn't we?"
"Jace!"
It was Isabel, her face bloody, struggling into a sitting position. "Jace!" He tried to turn toward her, tried to say something, but his words were gone. He slid to his knees. A heavy weight was pressing on his shoulders, and the earth was calling him, down, down, down. He was barely aware of Isabel crying his name as the darkness carried him away. Simon was a veteran of countless battles. That is, if you counted battles engaged in while playing Dungeons and Dragons. His friend Eric was the military history buff, and he was the one who usually organized the war part of the games, which involved dozens of tiny figurines moving in straight lines across a flat landscape drawn on butcher paper. That was the way he'd always thought of battles. Or the way they were in movies, with two groups of people advancing at each other across a flat expanse of land. Straight lines and orderly progression. This was nothing like that. This was chaos, a melee of shouting and movement, and the landscape wasn't flat but a mass of mud and blood churned into a thick, unstable paste. Simon had imagined that the Night Children would walk to the battlefield and be greeted by someone in charge. He imagined he'd see the battle from a distance first and be able to watch as the two sides clashed against each other. But there was no greeting, and there were no sides. The battle loomed up out of the darkness as if he'd wandered by accident from a deserted side street into a riot in the middle of Times Square. Suddenly there were crowds surging around him, hands grabbing him, shoving him out of the way, and the vampires were scattering, diving into the battle without even a glance back for him. And there were demons. Demons everywhere. And he'd never imagined the kind of sounds they'd make, the screaming and hooting and grunting, and what was worse, the sounds of tearing and shredding and hungry satisfaction. Simon wished he could turn his vampire hearing off, but he couldn't, and the sounds were like knives piercing his eardrums. He stumbled over a body lying half in and half out of the mud, turned to see if help was needed, and saw that the shadow hunter at his feet was gone from the shoulders up. White bone gleamed against the dark earth, and despite Simon's vampire nature, he felt nauseated. "I must be the only vampire in the world sickened by the sight of blood," he thought. And then something struck him hard from behind and he went over, skidding down a slope of mud into a pit. Simon's wasn't the only body down there. He rolled onto his back just as the demon loomed up over him. It looked like the image of death,
from a medieval woodcut, an animated skeleton, a bloodied hatchet clutched in one bony hand. He threw himself to the side as the blade thumped down inches from his face. The skeleton made a disappointing hissing noise and hoisted the hatchet again, and was struck from the side by a club of knotted wood. The skeleton burst apart like a piñata filled with bones. They rattled into pieces with a sound like castanets clacking before vanishing into the darkness. A shadow hunter stood over Simon. It was no one he'd ever seen before, a tall man, bearded and blood-spattered, who ran a grimy hand across his forehead as he stared down at Simon, leaving a dark streak behind.
You all right?
Stunned, Simon nodded and began scrambling to his feet.
Thanks.
The stranger leaned down, offering a hand to help Simon up. Simon accepted and went flying up out of the pit. He landed on his feet at the edge, his feet skidding on the wet mud. The stranger offered a sheepish grin.
Sorry. Downworlder strength. My partner's a werewolf. I'm not used to it.
He peered at Simon's face.
You're a vampire, aren't you? How did you know?
The man grinned. It was a tired sort of grin, but there was nothing unfriendly about it.
Your fangs. They come out when you're fighting. I know because...
He broke off.
Simon could have filled in the rest for him. I know because I've killed my fair share of vampires. Anyway, thanks for fighting with us.
Simon was about to say that he hadn't exactly fought yet or contributed anything, really. He turned to say it and got exactly one word out of his mouth before something impossibly huge and clawed and ragged-winged swept down out of the sky and dug its talons into the shadow hunter's back. The man didn't even cry out. His head went back as if he were looking up in surprise, wondering what had a hold of him, and then he was gone, whipping up into the empty black sky in a whir of teeth and wings. His club thumped to the ground at Simon's feet. Simon didn't move. The whole thing, from the moment he'd fallen into the pit, had taken less than a minute. He turned numbly, staring around him at the blades whirling through the darkness, at the slashing talons of demons, at the points of illumination that raced here and there through the darkness like fireflies darting through foliage. And then he realized what they were. The gleaming lights of seraph blades. He couldn't see the Lightwoods, or the Penhallows, or Luke, or anyone else he might recognize. He wasn't a shadow hunter. And yet that man had thanked him for fighting. What he'd told Clary was true. This was his battle, too, and he was needed here. Not human Simon, who was gentle and geeky and hated the sight of blood, but vampire Simon, a creature he barely even knew.
Real vampires know that they're dead, Raphael had said.
But Simon didn't feel dead. He'd never felt more alive. He turned as another demon loomed up in front of him. This one, a lizard thing, scaled with rodent teeth. It swept down on Simon with its back claws extended. Simon leaped. He struck the massive side of the thing and clung, his nails digging in, the scales giving way under his grip. The mark on his forehead throbbed as he sank his fangs into the demon's neck. It tasted awful. When the glass stopped falling, there was a hole in the ceiling, several feet wide, as if a meteor had crashed through it. Cold air blew in through the gap. Shivering, Clary got to her feet, brushing glass dust from her clothes. The witchlight that had lit the hall had been doused. It was gloomy inside now, thick with shadows and dust. The faint illumination of the fading portal in the square was just visible, glowing through the open front doors. It was probably no longer safe to stay in here, Clary thought. She should go to the Penhallows and join Aline. She was partway across the hall when footsteps sounded on the marble floor. Heart pounding, she turned and saw Malachi, a long, spidery shadow in the half-light, striding toward the dais. But what was he still doing here? Shouldn't he be with the rest of the shadow hunters on the battlefield? As he drew closer to the dais, she noticed something that made her put her hand to her mouth, stifling a cry of surprise. There was a hunched, dark shape perched on Malachi's shoulder. A bird. A raven, to be exact. Hugo. Clary ducked to crouch behind a pillar as Malachi climbed the dais steps. There was something unmistakably furtive in the way he glanced from side to side.
Apparently satisfied that he was unobserved, he drew something small and glittering from his pocket and slipped it onto his finger. A ring? He reached to twist it, and Clary remembered Hodge in the library at the Institute, taking the ring from Jace's hand. The air in front of Malachi shimmered faintly, as if with heat. A voice spoke from it, a familiar voice, cool and cultured, now touched with just the faintest annoyance.
"What is it, Malachi? I'm in no mood for small talk right now."
"My lord, Valentine," said Malachi. His usual hostility had been replaced with a slimy obsequiousness. "Hugin visited me not a moment ago, bringing news. I assumed you had already reached the mirror, and therefore he sought me out instead. I thought you might want to know."
Valentine's tone was sharp. "Very well. What news?"
"It's your son, lord. Your other son. Hugin trapped him to the valley of the cave. He may even have followed you through the tunnels to the lake." Clary clutched the pillar with whitened fingers. They were talking about Jace. Valentine grunted.
"Did he meet his brother there?"
"Hugin says that he left the two of them fighting." Clary felt her stomach turn over. Jace fighting Sebastian? She thought of the way Sebastian had lifted Jace at the guard and flung him, as if he weighed nothing. A wave of panic surged over her, so intense that for a moment her ears buzzed. By the time the room swam back into focus, she had missed whatever Valentine had said to Malachi in return.
"It is the ones old enough to be marked, but not old enough to fight, that concerns me," Malachi was saying now. "They didn't vote in the council's decision. It seems unfair to punish them in the same way that those who are fighting must be punished."
"I did consider that." Valentine's voice was a bass rumble.
"Because teenagers are more lightly marked, it takes them longer to become forsaken. Several days, at least. I believe it may well be reversible."
"While those of us who have drunk from the mortal cup will remain entirely unaffected?"
"I'm busy, Malachi," said Valentine. "I've told you that you'll be safe. I am trusting my own life to this process. Have some faith."
Malachi bowed his head.
"I have great faith, my lord. I have kept it for many years, in silence, serving you always."
"And you will be rewarded," said Valentine.
Malachi looked up.
"My lord."
But the air had stopped shimmering. Valentine was gone. Malachi frowned, then marched down the dais steps and toward the front doors. Clary shrank back against the pillar, hoping desperately that he wouldn't see her. Her heart was pounding. What had all that been about? What was all this about forsaken? The answer glimmered at the corner of her mind, but it seemed too horrible to contemplate. Even Valentine wouldn't. Something flew at her face then, whirling and dark. She barely had time to throw her arms up to cover her eyes when something slashed along the back of her hands. She heard a fierce caw and wings beat against her upraised wrists.
"Hugin, enough!"
It was Malachi's sharp voice.
"Hugin!"
There was another caw and a thump, then silence. Clary lowered her arms and saw the raven lying motionless at the consul's feet. Stunned or dead, she couldn't tell. With a snarl, Malachi kicked the raven savagely out of his way and strode toward Clary, glowering. He caught hold of her by a bleeding wrist and hauled her to her feet.
"Stupid girl," he said. "How long have you been there listening?"
"Long enough to know that you're one of the circle," she spat, twisting her wrist in his grasp, but he held firm. "You're on Valentine's side."
"There is only one side."
His voice came out in a hiss.
"The clave is foolish, misguided, pandering to half-men and monsters. All I want is to make it pure, to return it to its former glory. A goal you'd think every shadow hunter would approve of, but no. They listen to fools and demon lovers like you and Lucian Greymark. And now you've sent the flower of the Nephilim to die in this ridiculous battle. An empty gesture that will accomplish nothing. Valentine has already begun the ritual. Soon the angel will rise, and the Nephilim will become forsaken. All those save the few under Valentine's protection."
"That's murder. He's murdering Shadowhunters."
"Not murder," said the consul.
His voice rang with a fanatic's passion.
cleansing. Valentine will make a new world of Shadowhunters, a world purged of weakness and corruption.
Weakness and corruption isn't in the world, Clary snapped. It's in people, and it always will be. The world just needs good people to balance it out, and you're planning to kill them all.
He looked at her for a moment with honest surprise, as if he were astonished at the force in her tone.
Fine words from a girl who would betray her own father.
Malachi jerked her toward him, yanking brutally on her bleeding wrist.
Perhaps we should see just how much Valentine would mind if I taught you.
But Clary never found out what he wanted to teach her. A dark shape shot between them, wings outspread and claws extended. The raven caught Malachi with the tip of a talon raking a bloody groove across his face. With a cry, the consul let go of Clary and threw up his arms. But Hugo had circled back and was slashing at him viciously with beak and claws. Malachi staggered backward, arms flailing, until he struck the edge of a bench hard. It fell over with a crash. Unbalanced, he sprawled after it with a strangled cry, quickly cut off. Clary raced to where Malachi lay crumpled on the marble floor, a circle of blood already pooling around him. He had landed on a pile of glass from the broken ceiling, and one of the jagged chunks had pierced his throat. Hugo was still hovering in the air, circling Malachi's body. He gave a triumphant caw as Clary stared at him. Apparently, he hadn't appreciated the consul's kicks and blows. Malachi should have known better than to attack one of Valentine's creatures, Clary thought sourly. The bird was no more forgiving than its master. But there was no time to think about Malachi now. Alec had said that there were wards up around the lake, and that if anyone portaled there, an alarm would go off. Valentine was probably already at the mirror. There was no time to waste. Backing slowly away from the raven, Clary turned and dashed toward the front doors of the hall and the glimmer of the portal beyond. Chapter 20. Weighed in the Balance. Water struck her in the face like a blow. Clary went down, choking, into freezing darkness. Her first thought was that the portal had faded beyond repairing, and that she was stuck in the whirling, black in-between place where she would suffocate and die, just as Jace had warned her she might the first time she'd ever used a portal. Her second thought was that she was already dead. She was probably only actually unconscious for a few seconds, though it felt like the end of everything. When she came awake, it was with a shock that was like the shock of breaking through a layer of ice. She had been unconscious, and now, suddenly, she wasn't. She was lying on her back on cold, damp earth, staring up at a sky so full of stars it looked like a handful of silver pieces had been flung across its dark surface. Her mouth was full of brackish liquid. She turned her head to the side, coughed and spat and gasped until she could breathe again. When her stomach had stopped spasming, she rolled onto her side. Her wrists were bound together with a faint band of glowing light, and her legs felt heavy and strange, prickling all over with intense pins and needles. She wondered if she'd lain on them strangely, or perhaps it was a side effect of nearly drowning. The back of her neck burned as if a wasp had stung her. With a gasp, she heaved herself into a sitting position, legs stretched out awkwardly in front of her, and looked around. She was on the shore of Lake Lynn, where the water gave way to powdery sand. A black wall of rock rose behind her, the cliffs she remembered from her time here with Luke. The sand itself was dark, glittering with silver mica. Here and there in the sand were witchlight torches, filling the air with their silvery glow, leaving a tracery of glowing lines across the surface of the water. By the shore of the lake, a few feet away from where she sat, stood a low table made out of flat stones piled one on the other. It had clearly been assembled in haste, though the gaps between the stones were packed in with damp sand. Some of the rocks were slipping away at angles. Placed on the surface of the stones was something that made Clary catch her breath, the mortal cup, and laid crossways atop it, the mortal sword, a tongue of black flame in the witchlight. Around the altar were the black lines of runes carved into the sand. She stared at them, but they were jumbled, meaningless. A shadow cut across the sand, moving fast. The long black shadow of a man, made wavering and indistinct by the flickering light of the torches,
By the time Clary raised her head, he was already standing over her. Valentine. The shock of seeing him was so enormous that it was almost no shock at all. She felt nothing as she stared up at her father, whose face hovered against the dark sky like the moon, white, austere, pitted with black eyes like meteor craters. Over his shirt were looped a number of leather straps holding a dozen or more weapons. They bristled behind him like a porcupine's spines. He looked huge, impossibly broad, the terrifying statue of some warrior god intent on destruction.
"Clarissa," he said, "you took quite a risk portaling here. You're lucky I saw you appear in the water between 1 minute and the next. You were quite unconscious. If it weren't for me, you would have drowned."
A muscle beside his mouth moved slightly.
"And I wouldn't concern yourself overmuch with the alarm wards the Clave put up around the lake. I took those down the moment I arrived. No one knows you're here."
"I don't believe you." Clary opened her mouth to fling the words in his face. There was no sound. It was like one of those nightmares where she would try to scream and scream and nothing would happen. Only a dry puff of air came from her mouth, the gasp of someone trying to scream with a cut throat.
Valentine shook his head. "Don't bother trying to speak. I used a rune of quietude, one of those that the Silent Brothers use on the back of your neck. There's a binding rune on your wrists, and another disabling your legs. I wouldn't try to stand. Your legs won't hold you, and it'll only cause you pain."
Clary glared at him, trying to bore into him with her eyes, cut him with her hatred, but he took no notice.
"It could have been worse, you know. By the time I dragged you onto the bank, the lake poison had already started its work. I've cured you of it, by the way. Not that I expect your thanks."
He smiled thinly.
"You and I, we've never had a conversation, have we? Not a real conversation. You must be wondering why I never really seem to have a father's interest in you. I'm sorry if that hurt you."
Now her stare went from hateful to incredulous. How could they have a conversation when she couldn't even speak? She tried to force the words out, but nothing came from her throat but a thin gasp. Valentine turned back to his altar and placed his hand on the mortal sword. The sword gave off a black light, a sort of reverse glow, as if it were sucking the illumination from the air around it.
"I didn't know your mother was pregnant with you when she left me," he said.
He was speaking to her, Clary thought, in a way he never had before. His tone was calm, even conversational. But it wasn't that.
"I knew there was something wrong. She thought she was hiding her unhappiness. I took some blood from Ethereal, dried it to a powder, and mixed it with her food, thinking it might cure her unhappiness. If I'd known she was pregnant, I wouldn't have done it. I'd already resolved not to experiment again on a child of my own blood."
"You're lying," Clary wanted to scream at him, but she wasn't sure he was. He still sounded strange to her, different.
Maybe it was because he was telling the truth.
"After she fled Idris, I looked for her for years," he said, "and not just because she had the mortal cup, but because I loved her. I thought if I could only talk to her, I could make her see reason. I did what I did that night in Alicante in a fit of rage, wanting to destroy her, destroy everything about our life together. But afterward I..." He shook his head, turning away to look out over the lake. "When I finally tracked her down, I'd heard rumors she'd had another child, a daughter. I assumed you were Lucian's. He'd always loved her, always wanted to take her from me. I thought she must finally have given in, have consented to a child with a filthy downworlder." His voice tightened. "When I found her in your apartment in New York, she was still barely conscious. She spat at me that I'd made a monster out of her first child, and that she'd left me before I could do the same to her second. Then she went limp in my arms. All those years I'd looked for her, and that was all I had with her, those few seconds in which she looked at me with a lifetime's worth of hate. I realized something then." He lifted Malartek. Clary remembered how heavy even the half-turned sword had been to hold, and saw as the blade rose that the muscles of Valentine's arm stood out, hard and corded, like ropes snaking under the skin.
I realized, he said, that the reason she left me was to protect you. Jonathan she hated, but you... She would have done anything to protect you. To protect you from me. She even lived among mundanes, which I know must have pained her. It must have hurt her never to be able to raise you with any of our traditions. You are half of what you could have been. You have your talent with runes, but it's been squandered by your mundane upbringing. He lowered the sword. The tip of it hung now, just by Clary's face. She could see it out of the corner of her eye, floating at the edge of her vision like a silvery moth. I knew then that Jocelyn would never come back to me because of you. You are the only thing in the world she ever loved more than she loved me. And because of you, she hates me. And because of that, I hate the sight of you.
Clary turned her face away. If he was going to kill her, she didn't want to see her death coming.
Clarissa, said Valentine, look at me.
No.
She stared at the lake.
Far out across the water, she could see a dim red glow, like fire sunk away into ashes. She knew it was the light of the battle. Her mother was there, and Luke. Maybe it was fitting that they were together, even if she wasn't with them.
I'll keep my eyes on that light, she thought. I'll keep looking at it no matter what. It'll be the last thing I ever see.
Clarissa, Valentine said again, you look just like her. Do you know that? Just like Jocelyn. She felt a sharp pain against her cheek. It was the blade of the sword. He was pressing the edge of it against her skin, trying to force her to turn her head toward him.
I'm going to raise the angel now, he said. And I want you to watch as it happens.
There was a bitter taste in Clary's mouth.
I know why you're so obsessed with my mother. Because she was the one thing you thought you had total control over that ever turned around and bit you. You thought you owned her, and you didn't. That's why you want her here, right now, to witness you winning. That's why you'll make do with me.
The sword bit farther into her cheek. Valentine said,
Look at me, Clary.
She looked. She didn't want to, but the pain was too much. Her head jerked to the side almost against her will, the blood dripping in great fat drops down her face, splattering the sand. A nauseous pain gripped her as she raised her head to look at her father. He was gazing down at the blade of Malartek. It, too, was stained with her blood. When he glanced back at her, there was a strange light in his eyes.
Blood is needed to complete this ceremony, he said. I intended to use my own, but when I saw you in the lake, I knew it was Raziel's way of telling me to use my daughter's instead. It's why I cleared your blood of the lake's taint. You are purified now. Purified and ready. So thank you, Clarissa, for the use of your blood.
And in some way, Clary thought, he meant it, meant his gratitude. He had long ago lost the ability to distinguish between force and cooperation, between fear and willingness, between love and torture. And with that realization came a rush of numbness. What was the point of hating Valentine for being a monster, when he didn't even know he was one?
And now, Valentine said, I just need a bit more.
And Clary thought, a bit more what? Just as he swung the sword back, and the starlight exploded off it, and she thought, of course, it's not just blood he wants, but death. The sword had fed itself on enough blood by now. It probably had a taste for it, just like Valentine himself. Her eyes followed Malartek's black light as it sliced toward her,
and went flying.
Knocked out of Valentine's hand, it hurtled into the darkness. Valentine's eyes went wide. His gaze flicked down, fastening first on his bleeding sword hand, and then he looked up and saw, at the same moment that Clary did, what had struck the mortal sword from his grasp.
Jace.
A familiar-looking sword gripped in his left hand stood at the edge of a rise of sand, barely a foot from Valentine. Clary could see from the older man's expression that he hadn't heard Jace approach any more than she had. Clary's heart caught at the sight of him. Dried blood crusted the side of his face, and there was a livid red mark at his throat. His eyes shone like mirrors, and in the witchlight they looked black as Sebastian's.
Clary, he said, not taking his eyes off his father. Clary, are you all right?
Jace! She struggled to say his name, but nothing could pass the blockage in her throat. She felt as if she were choking.
She can't answer you, said Valentine. She can't speak.
Jace's eyes flashed.
What have you done to her?
He jabbed the sword toward Valentine, who took a step back. The look on Valentine's face was wary but not frightened. There was a calculation to his expression that Clary didn't like. She knew she ought to feel triumphant, but she didn't. If anything, she felt more panicked than she had a moment ago. She'd realized that Valentine was going to kill her, had accepted it. And now Jace was here, and her fear had expanded to encompass him as well. And he looked so... destroyed. His gear was ripped halfway open down one arm, and the skin beneath was crisscrossed with white lines. His shirt was torn across the front, and there was a fading erotse over his heart that had not quite managed to erase the angry red scar beneath it. Dirt stained his clothes, as if he'd been rolling around on the ground. But it was his expression that frightened her the most. It was so... bleak.
A rune of quietude. She won't be hurt by it.
Valentine's eyes fastened on Jace hungrily, Clary thought, as if he were drinking in the sight of him.
I don't suppose, Valentine asked, that you've come to join me. To be blessed by the angel beside me?
Jace's expression didn't change. His eyes were fixed on his adoptive father, and there was nothing in them. No lingering shred of affection or love or memory. There wasn't even hatred, just disdain, Clary thought. A cold disdain.
I know what you're planning to do, Jace said. I know why you're summoning the angel, and I won't let you do it. I've already sent Isabel to warn the army. Warnings will do them little good. This is not the sort of danger you can run from.
Valentine's gaze flicked down to Jace's sword.
Put that down, he began,
and we can talk.
He broke off then. That's not your sword. That's a Morgenstern sword.
Jace smiled, a dark, sweet smile.
It was Jonathan's. He's dead now.
Valentine looked stunned.
You mean... I took it from the ground where he'd dropped it, Jace said without emotion, after I killed him.
Valentine seemed dumbfounded.
You killed Jonathan? How could you have? He would have killed me, said Jace. I had no choice.
I didn't mean that. Valentine shook his head. He still looked stunned, like a boxer who'd been hit too hard in the moment before he collapsed to the mat.
I raised Jonathan. I trained him myself. There was no better warrior. Apparently, Jay said, there was.
But, and Valentine's voice cracked, the first time Clary had ever heard a flaw in the smooth, unruffled facade of that voice.
But he was your brother.
No, he wasn't. Jace took a step forward, nudging the blade an inch closer to Valentine's heart.
What happened to my real father? Isabel said he died in a raid, but did he really? Did you kill him like you killed my mother?
Valentine still looked stunned. Clary sensed that he was fighting for control. Fighting against grief? Or just afraid to die?
I didn't kill your mother. She took her own life. I cut you out of her dead body. If I hadn't done that, you would have died along with her.
But why? Why did you do it? You didn't need a son. You had a son. Jace looked deadly in the moonlight. Clary thought, deadly and strange, like someone she didn't know. The hand that held the sword toward Valentine's throat was unwavering.
Tell me the truth, Jace said. No more lies about how we're the same flesh and blood. Parents lie to their children, but you're not my father, and I want the truth. It wasn't a son I needed, Valentine said. It was a soldier. I had thought Jonathan might be that soldier, but he had too much of the demon nature in him. He was too savage, too sudden, not subtle enough. I feared, even then, when he was barely out of infancy, that he would never have the patience or the compassion to follow me, to lead the Clave in my footsteps. So I tried again with you. And with you I had the opposite trouble. You were too gentle, too empathic. You felt others' pain as if it were your own. You couldn't even bear the death of your pets. Understand this, my son.
I loved you for those things. But the very things I loved about you made you no use to me.
So you thought I was soft and useless, said Jace. I suppose it will be surprising for you, then, when your soft and useless son cuts your throat.
We've been through this.
Valentine's voice was steady, but Clary thought she could see the sweat gleaming at his temples at the base of his throat.
You wouldn't do that. You didn't want to do it at Renwick's, and you don't want to do it now.
You're wrong.
Jace spoke in a measured tone. I have regretted not killing you every day since I let you go. My brother Max is dead because I didn't kill you that day. Dozens, maybe hundreds, are dead because I stayed my hand. I know your plan. I know you hope to slaughter almost every shadow hunter in Idris. And I ask myself, how many more have to die before I do what I should have done on Blackwell's Island?
No, he said. I don't want to kill you, but I will.
Don't do this, said Valentine.
Please, I don't want to...
To die? No one wants to die, Father.
The point of Jace's sword slipped lower, and then lower until it was resting over Valentine's heart. Jace's face was calm, the face of an angel dispatching divine justice.
Do you have any last words?
Jonathan.
Blood spotted Valentine's shirt where the tip of the blade rested, and Clary saw, in her mind's eye, Jace at Renwick's, his hand shaking, not wanting to hurt his father, and Valentine taunting him.
Drive the blade in 3 inches, maybe 4. It wasn't like that now.
Jace's hand was steady, and Valentine looked afraid.
Last words, hissed Jace. What are they?
Valentine raised his head. His black eyes as he looked at the boy in front of him were grave.
I'm sorry, he said. I am so sorry.
He stretched out a hand as if he meant to reach out to Jace, even to touch him. His hand turned, palm up, the fingers opening. And then there was a silver flash, and something flew by Clary in the darkness like a bullet shot out of a gun. She felt displaced air brush her cheek as it passed, and then Valentine had caught it out of the air. A long tongue of silver fire that flashed once in his hand as he brought it down.
It was the mortal sword.
It left a tracery of black light on the air as Valentine drove the blade of it into Jace's heart. Jace's eyes flew wide. A look of disbelieving confusion passed over his face. He glanced down at himself, where Malartek stuck grotesquely out of his chest. It looked more bizarre than horrible, like a prop from a nightmare that made no logical sense. Valentine drew his hand back then, jerking the sword out of Jace's chest the way he might have jerked a dagger from its scabbard, as if it had been all that was holding him up. Jace went to his knees. His sword slid from his grasp and hit the damp earth. He looked down at it in puzzlement, as if he had no idea why he had been holding it, or why he had let it go. He opened his mouth as if to ask the question, and blood poured over his chin, staining what was left of his ragged shirt. Everything after that seemed to Clary to happen very slowly, as if time were stretching itself out. She saw Valentine sink to the ground and pull Jace onto his lap as if Jace were still very small and could be easily held. He drew him close and rocked him, and lowered his face and pressed it against Jace's shoulder, and Clary thought for a moment that he might even have been crying. But when he lifted his head, Valentine's eyes were dry.
My son, he whispered. My boy.
The terrible slowing of time stretched around Clary like a strangling rope, while Valentine held Jace and brushed his bloody hair back from his forehead. He held Jace while he died, and the light went out of his eyes. And then Valentine laid his adopted son's body gently down on the ground, crossing his arms over his chest as if to hide the gaping, bloody wound there.
Ave, he began,
as if he meant to say the words over Jace, the Shadow Hunter's farewell. But his voice cracked, and he turned abruptly and walked back toward the altar. Clary couldn't move, could barely breathe. She could hear her own heart beating, hear the scrape of her breathing in her dry throat. From the corner of her eye she could see Valentine standing by the edge of the lake, blood streaming from the blade of Malartek and dripping into the bowl of the mortal cup. He was chanting words she didn't understand. She didn't care to try to understand. It would all be over soon, and she was almost glad. She wondered if she had enough energy to drag herself over to where Jace lay, if she could lie down beside him and wait for it to be over. She stared at him, lying motionless on the churned, bloody sand. His eyes were closed, his face still. If it weren't for the gash across his chest, she could have told herself he was asleep. But he wasn't. He was a shadow hunter. He had died in battle. He deserved the last benediction. Ave atque vale. Her lips shaped the words, though they fell from her mouth in silent puffs of air. Halfway through, she stopped, her breath catching. What should she say? Hail and farewell, Jace Wayland? That name was not truly his. He had never even really been named, she thought, with agony. Just given the name of a dead child because it had suited Valentine's purposes at the time. And there was so much power in a name. Her head whipped around and she stared at the altar. The runes surrounding it had begun to glow. They were runes of summoning, runes of naming, and runes of binding. They were not unlike the runes that had kept Ithuriel imprisoned in the cellars beneath the Wayland Manor. Now very much against her will, she thought of the way Jace had looked at her then, the blaze of faith in his eyes, his belief in her. He had always thought she was strong. He had showed it in everything he did, in every look and every touch. Simon had faith in her too, yet when he'd held her, it had been as if she were something fragile, something made of delicate glass. But Jace had held her with all the strength he had, never wondering if she could take it. He'd known she was as strong as he was. Valentine was dipping the bloody sword over and over in the water of the lake now, chanting low and fast. The water of the lake was rippling, as if a giant hand were stroking fingers lightly across its surface. Clary closed her eyes. Remembering the way Jace had looked at her the night she'd freed Ithuriel, she couldn't help but imagine the way he'd look at her now if he saw her trying to lie down to die on the sand beside him. He wouldn't be touched, wouldn't think it was a beautiful gesture. He'd be angry at her for giving up. He'd be so disappointed. Clary lowered herself so that she was lying on the ground, heaving her dead legs behind her. Slowly, she crawled across the sand, pushing herself along with her knees and bound hands. The glowing band around her wrists burned and stung. Her shirt tore as she dragged herself across the ground, and the sand scraped the bare skin of her stomach. She barely felt it. It was hard work, pulling herself along like this. Sweat ran down her back between her shoulder blades. When she finally reached the circle of runes, she was panting so loudly that she was terrified Valentine would hear her. But he didn't even turn around. He had the mortal cup in one hand and the sword in the other. As she watched, he drew his right hand back, spoke several words that sounded like Greek, and threw the cup. It shone like a falling star as it hurtled toward the water of the lake and vanished beneath the surface with a faint splash. The circle of runes was giving off a faint heat, like a partly banked fire. Clary had to twist and struggle to reach her hand around to the stele jammed into her belt. The pain in her wrists spiked as her fingers closed around the handle. She pulled it free with a muffled gasp of relief. She couldn't separate her wrists, so she gripped the stele awkwardly in both hands. She pushed herself up with her elbow, staring down at the runes. She could feel the heat of them on her face. They had begun to shimmer like witchlight. Valentine had the mortal sword poised, ready to throw it. He was chanting the last words of the summoning spell. With a final burst of strength, Clary drove the tip of the stele into the sand, not scraping aside the runes Valentine had drawn, but tracing her own pattern over them, writing a new rune over the one that symbolized his name. It was such a small rune, she thought. Such a small change. Nothing like her immensely powerful alliance rune. Nothing like the Mark of Cain. But it was all she could do. Spent, Clary rolled onto her side just as Valentine drew his arm back and let the mortal sword fly. Malartek hurtled end over end, a black and silver blur that joined soundlessly with the black and silver lake. A great plume went up from the place where it splashed down, a flowering of platinum water. The plume rose higher and higher, a geyser of molten silver, like rain falling upward. There was a great crashing noise,